Welcome to the On the Shelf podcast with host Joanna Lewis from The Pharmacist's Guide. The podcast features conversations about wellness, including nutrition, supplements, skincare, and anything else on the shelf. On top of the importance of our physical wellness, we will also touch on mental and emotional wellness throughout our episodes.
Welcome to the On the Shelf podcast, sponsored by Pharmacy Times and part of the Pharmacy Focus series. I am your host, Joanna Lewis. I am a pharmacist and creator of the online platform, The Pharmacist Guide. This podcast focuses on anything you can find on the shelf, specifically in the drugstore, including skincare, beauty products, supplements, and over-the-counter medications. We also talk about mental, physical, and emotional wellness. And today we are going to talk about a condition that affects up to 1 billion people worldwide, making it the third most common illness. And to talk about this, we have researcher and chief scientific officer of Biohaven Pharmaceuticals, Dr. Charlie Conway. Dr. Conway is the chief scientific officer at Biohaven, a clinical stage biopharmaceutical company advancing innovative therapies for neurological diseases. Dr. Conway has 30 years of research experience examining the biology of pain mechanisms, including 17 years in drug discovery and development at Bristol-Myers Squibb Company, and 5.5 years as the chief scientific officer at Biohaven. He earned a PhD in neuroscience from the University of California, Santa Barbara, and has dedicated his scientific career to bringing relief to the 1 billion people worldwide who suffer from migraine. Welcome, Dr. Conway. We're so excited to have you as a guest today.
Thanks so much, Joanne. It's a really pleasure to be here with you and to speak with your listeners about what I think is really an important and topic, and a topic that doesn't get enough attention, but we're going to work to resolve that.
Absolutely. So on that note, could you just give us a brief overview about yourself and your career path?
Sure. So it's interesting, you know, you never know where you're going to go when you first start out and you go to college and start working on things. I actually had a minor in computer information systems and a bachelor's in experimental psychology. And I worked into the IT arena for a communications company for 5 years. And then it was just kind of turning the crank. And I wanted to do something, I know it sounds overly flowery and rosy, but to make a difference in the world. So I quit my job. I went to graduate school. I got my PhD in neuroscience. And my research was based on understanding how the brain matures and how the maturing brain influences pain processing. And so I became an expert in pain and pain processing. I did my postdoc at UC San Diego, and then I went to work for Bristol-Myers Squibb Company, where I led a drug discovery program in an area that was brand new at the time. This is going back 22 years ago, for this new little molecule called CGRP, and started following that and the science behind that and its role in migraine. And so, you know, migraine is inherently a pain disorder in one part, but it's actually more than that. It's a multi-symptom disease. So people who suffer from migraine don't just have pain, but they have hypersensitivity to light and sound and taste and smells. And it's not just hypersensitivity. Like, the light is so bright, it's painful. The sound is so loud, it's painful. So people who suffer from severe migraine go and sequester themselves in a room and just try to ride it out. And often migraine can last from 4 hours to 3 days if untreated. So that's a little bit about my background and kind of a little bit about about migraine. I'm happy to talk about more things, Joanna.
Yes. So I know you said you started out with like maybe spinal pain, and there's so many, it's kind of hard. I think it's interesting that you study psychology. I didn't realize that, because I do think there's, you know, in pain, there's not always this objective measure like we have in other areas of medicine. So how did you get to the migraine part? Was that just something you stumbled upon, or you just maybe naturally were more interested in it?
Yeah, so as a basic researcher, that means I'm reading scientific journals all the time. So one of the things I was following was the work of Lars Evanson and Peter Goadsby. And they were identifying this relationship with this trigeminal nerve chemical called CGRP. So let me just stop there. I just used a trigeminal nerve. So trigeminal nerve innervates the head and face, and it carries sensory system information into the brain. And so what Evanson and Goadsby showed was that if you were in an operating room procedure and you stimulated the trigeminal nerve, you got this release of CGRP levels. They were increased. And then in 1990, they showed that those levels were increased during the headache. And then in 1993, they showed that CGRP levels dropped coincident with anti-migraine treatment like a triptan or dihydroergotamine, which we call DHE for short. So that pretty much nailed the idea that this molecule CGRP that was released by the trigeminal nerve played a pivotal role in migraine. And so CGRP is the short version. The actual version of the word is calcitonin gene-related peptide. And what you may or may not know is when one nerve communicates to another nerve, it's not really electrical between the nerves. It does carry electrical signal down the nerve, but when it communicates from one nerve to another, it actually releases neurotransmitters or neuromodulators from one nerve to another. And then there's a receiving receptors on the other side that respond to what's released by the sending nerve. So for lack of a more scientific term, the sending nerve spits out chemicals and the receiving nerve responds to those chemicals, and CGRP actually changes the way that the brain responds to input. And so it takes a normal system and makes it hyperexcitable.
That's so interesting. Okay, so is CGRP, it's not just in migraines, right? Is it in other pain mechanisms too?
So all pain sensing fibers contain CGRP. And if there's a low level of stimulation, CGRP is not released. It's the fast acting transmitters like aspartate and glutamate that are released. But when there's a high frequency stimulation, then the peptide neurotransmitters like CGRP, and CGRP is actually a neuromodulator, is released with high frequency stimulation. And so when the trigeminal nerve is superactive, then you get this CGRP release. And so if you compared blood levels of people who don't have migraine to people who do have migraine, it's very interesting. People who suffer from migraine tend to have higher levels of CGRP all the time. It's kind of like they're closer to that trigger point of being thrown over to that hyperexcitable state. And so by blocking CGRP, in other words, like putting tape over a keyhole, then you can stop that hyperexcitability state if it's going on, or maybe prevent it from even starting if you do it before it happens.
Ah, I see. Okay. And that's going to go into one of my questions down the line. Okay. And one more question, just because I feel like you're educating me a lot here too. You talked about there's this big release of neurotransmitters. And I know a lot of other migraine medications target those neurotransmitters, but the CGRP inhibitors were like earlier on in the pathway, correct? So we're kind of stopping it earlier on.
So, you know, this is one of the first, CGRP blockers is one of the first sort of scientifically specific disease-linked approaches to treating migraine. And in the past, there were agents like dihydroergotamine, which we didn't really understand exactly how they worked. And, you know, triptans were designed initially because we thought that vasodilation was the problem. Well, it's true, there is vasodilation during migraine, and triptans can, you know, reverse vasodilation, but actually triptans are vasoconstrictors. So people who have hypertension or cardiovascular disease, they're contraindicated for the use of triptans. And so there are roughly, you know, 2.5 million migraine sufferers, according to an epidemiology study by Dr. Dom Buse, who have migraine, but have had an event, a condition, or a procedure of the cardiovascular sort that means they shouldn't be taking migraine. And then if you look at the research of Dr. Richard Lipton, there are other people who have risk factors that actually means that they shouldn't be taking those treatments. So the thing we know now is that the triptans, they do have a vasoconstrictive component, but they also actually reduce the release of CGRP. If you look in experimental models, you can see that that's the case. So the beauty of the CGRP-specific blockers is we realize now you don't need the vasoconstrictive component in order to have a benefit in migraine treatment. You just need to stop the CGRP molecule. And so these newer treatments, small molecule, oral, or nasal blockers of the CGRP receptor, that class is called GPANTs because they all end in GPANT, is one way to block the CGRP signaling. And another way is with injectable monoclonal antibodies. And the monoclonal antibodies are used usually for prevention for someone who has a high frequency or high disability. The GPANTs historically, over the most recent years, were initially used for acute treatment of migraine. That means you take it when you have an attack to abort an attack. But now comes rimegepant, which is what I call my baby. And, you know, I started working this 22 years ago, which is now called Nurtec. And it was approved for both acute and preventive treatment of migraine. And we can go into that in a little more detail if you want to.
I would love to because, you know, I know a lot of people take medications. You know, they take rescue medications or they take preventative medications. A lot of people have to take both. During pharmacy school, and we can talk, this is kind of, migraine is such a big topic, but, you know, I think one of the important things is to figure out your triggers. And when I was in pharmacy school is when I really started to get migraines. And I had to realize, you know, stress was one of my big triggers. But I had to take something different for preventative, and then I had to take something different, like as a rescue medication. And I'm really interested in how Nurtec can do both. So yes, I would love to hear that.
Yeah, so it's really interesting that you yourself have personal experience with that. Look, I don't know of any migraine sufferer who doesn't have a history of using a cocktail of drugs, because you know, no, we didn't have really great tools that were very specific. And so you were just trying to survive and find something that worked, anything that worked. And then sometimes the thing that worked for you would stop working and you would have to find something else.
Exactly.
And sometimes your migraine shifts over time. So if you look at sort of, you know, migraine sufferers, there are approximately, you know, 40 million people in the US living with migraine and a billion in the world. It tends to peak between the ages of, you know, 18 and 45. And so it's right in those high productive years of people's lives. And it's you know, three times more frequent in women than it is in men. And so, you know, there's, it's not always static is what I'm trying to say. There's like a life cycle to it. And so the challenge here is that sometimes, you know, in the past you found something that worked and then your migraine would change. And then it wouldn't work for you. So let's just talk a little bit about, you know, our understanding of the science. So science and medicine have you know, identified CGRP as the main culprit in migraine. And so by blocking CGRP, we know now we can turn off an attack when it happens. And because CGRP levels are elevated in people who suffer from migraine, using monoclonal antibodies to reduce the level of CGRP, or taking an oral GPANT like Nurtec every other day to also reduce the signal drive on the receptor is a way to avoid you going over the threshold. So, Johnny, you talked about your triggers. And if you're in a hypersensitive state already, it may take only a little bit of a trigger to push you over the edge. Whereas if you have something that's bringing you down so that your CGRP drive or your engagement of CGRP with the receptors is more like someone who doesn't suffer from migraine, then you have a better chance of not being thrown over the edge into an attack. I'm not sure if I'm making sense, but feel free to ask me more questions.
No, lots of sense. I actually had a physician, or one of my doctors actually used a very similar example. He said it's kind of like a bucket. And, you know, maybe one or two of your triggers might not push you over the edge, but when your bucket gets full enough, you know, just a little thing like being dehydrated or, you know, low blood sugar or something can push you over the edge. So I get it. That's very interesting, you know, how it, you know, people have higher CGRP levels, migraine sufferers do, and this really kind of not necessarily neutralizes it, but manages it.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, when we were doing our studies to look at the safety of Nurtec, one thing that the FDA requires you to do is what's called a long-term safety study. So you want a year's worth of data on people who are taking it on a regular basis. And when we gave it to patients and we did our acute treatment trials, we learned something kind of interesting. And that is, we were getting 2 days of benefit with a single dose. Now, you're like, wow, that's kind of weird. How can you get, you know, 2 days of benefit? Does it last in your body for 2 days? Well, so Nurtec has a half-life of around 11 hours. So most of your pharmacy students will know that it takes about 5 half-lives for a drug to get out of your body, right? So, you know, if you're 11 hours, then you need, you know, about, you know, 2.5 days of coverage. So there's an existing drug in your system, but in some ways it's like hitting the reset button. It's like taking you back from on the edge of excitable to non-excitable. It's kind of like emptying the bucket. And so then it has to fill up again before you get thrown over. So when we were doing our trials of patients in our long-term safety studies, we were looking at, you know, how much drug were they using and how often were they taking, you know, their treatments. And initially we just rolled over patients from our phase 3 trials into our long-term safety studies. And so those patients that were enrolled in the phase 3 trials, they would have had a history of migraine attacks that would be of a certain frequency. And so we would monitor them and understand their baseline before they started, you know, into the study. So one of the things that we did is we were looking at these patient groups and kind of tracking their overall safety and efficacy. This was the long-term safety study was designed to support the safety of acute treatment. And so when we gave these people who are migraine sufferers free access to drug for a year, we first observed them for 30 days to see what's their sort of baseline number of attacks. And then we gave patients a free supply of drug for a year. And then we tracked them for a year and looked at how many pills did they use, what were the safety profile, and what was their sort of migraine frequency and disability. And what we found was people who had rolled over from our phase 3 trials, who had a history of about 2 to 8 moderate or severe migraine attacks per month, they were only using about, on average, about 5 pills per month. Now, you may think, Charlie, that doesn't make any sense. If they're having 2 to 8 attacks per month, how can you only use like 5 pills per month on average? Well, remember, I told you that we were getting 2 days of benefit, 40 hours of benefit with each dose. So you don't necessarily need a dose on every day, if that makes sense. When we looked at patients who had a history of 9 to 14 attacks, so a higher frequency, they were only using on average around 8 pills per month over a year's time. So we actually enrolled a third cohort, a fixed dosing group cohort that was added by amendment to the study with a history of 4 to 14 attacks. And we required them to take every other day fixed dosing in order to get the higher frequency, because we wanted to really pressure test the safety of this molecule. And when you gave it to people just sort of ad lib, they weren't using it in a really high frequency way. Well, long story short, that group that we gave the drug to and said, take this every other day, regardless of whether you have a migraine or not, their migraine frequency of moderate to severe migraine days went down from 12 days a month at baseline to around 6 days a month at the end of 3 months. So we cut their migraine frequency in half with an every other day dosing. So,
I mean, that's huge compared, you know, when you think about like the lost productivity and everything that goes into, you know, the cost of migraine. So I have a question. I know what you talked about, you can take it every other day. And I know when I, you know, so I have a lot of familiar, I'm very familiar with triptans. And if it doesn't work within like 1 to 2 hours, you can usually take like a repeat dose.
Yeah.
But often in triptans, like, and I love triptans, like they've rescued me out of many migraines, but often you may, your migraine will come back, you know, like 18 hours later.
Yeah.
And with the half-life of Nurtec, are you saying that that essentially doesn't happen?
So what you're talking about is called rebound headache. And we haven't seen that with Nurtec. So we think it's because from a pharmacology basis, we're a CGRP receptor antagonist. So we're a blocker instead of a triptan as a serotonin agonist. So they're driving the system. It seems to be that when you drive the system with an agonist, there's a response to when it goes away, more so than there is if you have a antagonist and then you take the antagonist away. And I think it's because there's very little underlying CGRP tone on a regular basis. And so having your antagonist PK profile go up and then down doesn't trigger in our clinical trial experience sort of that recurring attack. But it's also different in another way. So, and maybe you've had this experience, or maybe you know people who had this experience. Another unfortunate thing around many of the historical, you know, triptans and other agents that have been around for, you know, the past 30 years has been kind of a dearth in terms of new treatments. It's really just been those same kinds of treatments we've had for a long time, is that a lot of those treatments are associated with what's called medication overuse headache. That is, if you use them more than 10 or 15 times a month, they actually increase the number of attacks that you have on a monthly basis. And so often I'll talk to physicians who are like, you know, tier three pain specialists. And the first thing they do is they take their patients off all of their, you know, polypharmacy daily med regimen that they've come to know and love to survive. Because unfortunately, many of these things, and I'm talking including over-the-counter things with
like
acetaminophen and aspirin and caffeine and those things. And ibuprofen, you know, they're associated with too high frequency use with medication overuse headache, which is the absolute worst thing your medicine can do for you, right, Joanna? Is to make the disease state worse that you're trying to treat.
Now, I can imagine, though, these physicians trying to take away a patient's crutch, you know, like we all kind of have our little regimen that hopefully will get us out of this migraine state. But yeah, no, you're so right. I remember, you know, obviously in school learning this about rebound headaches, but actually, like, I've actually, you know, had that happen myself. So I wanted to circle back too, because, well, I would say, you know, pharmacy school, all that stress is what triggered it for me. And that was the early 2000s. And like we were talking about earlier, you know, there wasn't really a lot of, you know, you'd go to the doctor, they had a couple targeted therapies, but mostly they'd be like, well, this, you know, this antidepressant works prophylactically, this beta blocker works prophylactically. We're not really sure how or why, but it does. And it just seemed like there was nothing really on the market or nothing new coming out for migraines. And it seems like just in the past few years, we've got a lot of new therapies. But I know you said this research, you guys have been working on this for like 22 years.
That's
so how did
true.
The development?
That just shows you the long path of following the science. So remember, you know, I told you, you know, it was 1988 when Goadsby and Evanson first showed the CGRP levels, you know, had risen. And so, and then 93, by the time they showed that they dropped coincident with pain relief in headache. So it just takes that long to run a drug discovery program. And, you know, a drug discovery program is it's a trio of scientists. You've got your biologists like me, who are designing assays and helping understand when the drug has the properties that you want, what those properties are. And you have chemists who are modifying molecules all the time and sending them to biologists to test. And then you have toxicologists who are saying, okay, let's just look at the safety profile here, gang. So long story short, you know, it takes a lot of time,
a
lot of years and a lot of people working hard in order to bring forward a drug that actually has the profile that you'd want. And look, when I got into this, I knew that in this area, the thing that was not sort of so acceptable was the tolerability profile of the current treatments. And so I hear, you know, many people say, yeah, I don't take my migraine treatment until I get home because it makes it hard for me to work, or I can't think clearly, or whatever. And that's just not what you want, right? You want a treatment that you can take whenever and wherever you need it, something that's going to work for you and that work fast and lasts. And something that's not going to do the worst thing, which is make your migraine get worse over time because you used your treatment.
Exactly. Well, I know we talked about, you know, triptans aren't really for people with heart conditions or cardiovascular disease. What about Nurtec? Are there any contraindications?
So because Nurtec is not an active vasoconstrictor, you don't have the same kind of contraindications. So you won't see anything in the label about patients with cardiovascular disease, and you won't see anything in the label about patients with hypertension. And so I think that's really comforting, especially to primary care physicians who maybe have been treating patients for a long time and they're aging into cardiovascular risk factors. So, you know, it's a big benefit. First of all, it's a benefit to those people who, you know, aren't able to take triptans because of the vasoconstrictor properties, but it's also a benefit in that, you know, they're not associated with sort of the medication overuse headache profile that you see from many of these other medicines that are out there.
No, agreed. So back to some of like the pharmacokinetics. Sure. I know this is probably common knowledge for a lot of people, but ODT stands for oral disintegrating tablet. And a lot of times when people get migraines, they also have, you know, a lot of nausea and a lot of like gut stasis and like your gut's just not working like it should. So I really think that's why, you know, this is another amazing part of Nurtec. Can you talk about why that's important? I believe you guys work on some drugs that have intranasal pathways as well.
Yeah, so that's my other baby. That's the Zavegepant. So Zavegepant is in under FDA review right now, so it's not a marketed drug yet. But let's just talk about Nurtec ODT and sort of the PK properties and the efficacy profile. So I don't know if you know this, Joanna, but initially we had both a regular tablet and an ODT in our phase 3 trials. And when we were looking at the results of the phase 3 trials, we saw something very interesting. The efficacy on the normal tablet, it didn't show a statistical significance until the 2-hour mark. Whereas the ODT showed statistical significance at the 1-hour mark. Well, if you've got a medicine for migraine and you're a migraine sufferer, wouldn't you rather have something that worked at 1 hour than something that worked at 2 hours? So
absolutely,
we just went after the ODT because we like to think about speed to patient in terms of our philosophy. Let's get something that patients can use, but also let's meet the patient's overall needs. So if you're one of those migraine sufferers who has a high nausea and, you know, on average, you know, 50% of migraine sufferers have a nausea component. Sometimes you're so nauseous that you can't even think of putting a pill in your mouth and swallowing it with a glass of water. Or if you do, you lose it right back after you've taken it.
It didn't do its thing.
So the beauty of the ortisol tablet is you put it in your mouth, either under your tongue or on top of your tongue, and it's like quick dissolve. It's like 1, 2, 3, it's dissolved. And you didn't even have to take it with a glass of water. So the beauty of that is it just makes it a more usable treatment by a larger population of migraine sufferers. And we wanted to meet the largest need out there. And by bringing the ODT, we felt that that was the best way to do it.
No, absolutely. And I mean, that's why we have like Zofran ODT, you know, some of even our nausea medications, just because, you know, a lot of people, when they're in that state, they can't even get anything down.
Right.
So what about like a window of time? Like, do you need to take it, you know, right away when you first feel your migraine take, like if you're just taking it acutely?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So the sort of timing of when you take things has sort of been most heavily studied by the 7 different triptan companies that wanted to beat each other up about whether they worked early or whether they worked late or whether it was, you know, mild or moderate, et cetera. Here's what we know. The rapid rate of rise is the thing that is the most beneficial in terms of staving off a migraine or stopping the migraine in its tracks. And so that's why with the ODT, we have a shorter Tmax. So the time to maximal effect is quicker with the ODT formulation than it is with the oral traditional oral tablet. And so that translates to a more rapid rise of drug in your system. And that's helpful for being effective. And it turns out with the triptans, and there's some controversy here, but I think in general, you'll find most of the literature says, if you wait too late in the attack, it's less effective. So there'd be fewer populations, fewer percentages of patients who would benefit the longer you wait. It doesn't seem to be that in the GPANT era and for Nurtec. Whenever you can stop the CGRP receptor interaction and stop driving that signal that produces hyperexcitability, there's benefit. And we think it's because, you know, there's actually 3 places where CGRP is released. So if you look at the trigeminal nerve, has its peripheral terminals around the middle meningeal arteries. So the dura, the tough outer covering of the brain, is where the middle meningeal arteries run. And the trigeminal nerves innervate those dural arteries. And they release CGRP there in the dura. CGRP is also released where the cell bodies are located. And that's in the trigeminal ganglion, which is outside the blood-brain barrier. And then CGRP is released as well at the level of the caudal trigeminal nucleus in the brainstem. And so there's 3 areas where CGRP is released. And honestly, right now, nobody can tell you what is the most important area. But in my view, in my read of the literature, it looks like the trigeminal ganglion, where the cell bodies are, which is actually part of the key component of when a nerve fires or doesn't fire, seems to be a hotbed of activity for producing this sort of hyperexcitable state. And that's in part because when CGRP gets released in the trigeminal ganglion, it produces a double whammy effect. That is, it acts directly on pain fibers and makes them more likely to fire, but it also produces the release of nitric oxide from satellite glial cells. And nitric oxide has been used for decades as an experimental way to produce a migraine attack. So that sort of double whammy is kind of a hotbed of activity. And so by being able to turn off the CGRP action at the receptor level on pain fibers and also turn off the release of nitric oxide, that's a contributing factor to hyperexcitability, we think is one of the key reasons why we can have efficacy across the time frame of a migraine attack.
Oh, that's huge too. Thank you so much for educating me on that, because I didn't know that piece. And I know, with triptans, at least for me, like if I wait too long, it's just like, it's over. Like it doesn't really work. And I, you know, as the pharmacist in my friend group, I have, you know, several friends who suffer from migraines, just because, like we said, there's you know, what, like 30 million people, 40 million people in the United States. And I remember one of my friends was like, I keep getting these headaches. And I had to educate her, like, you're taking your medicine too late. Like, you need to take it like the minute you feel it, not when you think it's just like got to that, oh, now it's too bad point. But, you know, it sounds like CGRP is just a whole different ball game. So how many are in this drug class right now? Nurtec was the first to market, correct?
So it's interesting because early on when the work was being done, actually the gepants were in drug discovery earlier than the monoclonal antibodies. But some of the companies who had molecules in this space weren't successful, and it wasn't clear why they weren't successful. So there was a little bit of a delay. So long story short, the monoclonal antibodies that came out, you know, in 2018, they were the first sort of CGRP blocking therapies. And then Ubrelvy and Nurtec followed. And that was, you know, in December of 2019 and February of 2020, respectively. So a couple of years behind the first of the antibodies. So what's out there now in terms of sort of the acute treatments is you've got Nurtec ODT for acute treatment of migraine. You've got Ubrelvy for acute treatment of migraine. Those are both gepants. So that's rimegepant and ubrogepant, respectively. And then we mentioned my baby number two, which is avegepant, which is an intranasal that will be also for the acute treatment of migraine with an ultra rapid onset of action. It even has a Tmax that's twice as fast as Nurtec ODT, if you can imagine that. So we're really excited about bringing that forward. And then on the preventive treatment side, you've got four monoclonal antibodies, Aimovig, Emgality, Ajovy, and Vyepti. Which are injectable and used for the preventive treatment of migraine, usually once a month or once every 3 months, depending on which one it is. And then there are two oral CGRP receptor antagonist gepants. There's Nurtec ODT, which was the first oral for preventive treatment of migraine. And then there's Qulipta, which is the next oral. But of all of these, Nurtec ODT is the only agent that's shown efficacy in both acute and preventive treatment of migraine, and the only one that's approved for both.
No, I think that's amazing. And it's, again, so exciting because I remember, again, like 20 years ago, we did not have even close to this many options. So what about, just to pivot a little bit, behavioral modifications? I know we talked a little bit about understanding your triggers, and medications obviously can be lifesavers. But what about, what would you say to like behavioral modifications plus medications?
Yeah, I think that that's the best you can do. Everybody has to know themselves. And what's unique about migraine and most disease states is people know themselves and they know what is something that, you know, is a trigger for them. And so if you have that and you know it, then you can avoid it. And it's the combination of your self-knowledge and good treatments that are, I think, the most beneficial. It's interesting, Joanna, but patients are really smart. So when we first had Nurtec for acute intervention, we ran into sort of like four different patient types. So I'll give you the two extremes, and I'll give you two in the middle. So the first patient type is kind of the one that has, you know, just, you know, a handful of migraine attacks, you know, let's say 2 to 4 per month. And it's not severe or debilitating to the effect that they need to prevent a treatment. And so they just used, you know, Nurtec as needed to abort their attack. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have, you know, people who have high frequency. Some people have 12 plus, you know, migraine attacks per month. And for those people, you know, they need a preventive therapy. And so, you know, taking something that reduces that overall risk of hyperexcitability is important. But then there are people in the middle. And these are the ones to me that are really interesting that that know their triggers. For example, you've seen some of the, you know, migraine advertisements that, you know, feature one of our longtime takers of Nurtec. And it's the stress of exams. She's in physician assistant school that causes her to have a migraine. And so knowing that, she can take it ahead of exam week and then through exam week. And so she flips back and forth between the preventive use of Nurtec and the acute use of Nurtec. And just like that, others we've encountered who have menstrual related migraine take it before their cycle and through their cycle and then go back to just as needed. And so what we've learned is people like to be in control. And that's something I think is beautiful about Nurtec, is giving control back to patients, letting them decide, you know, for themselves, the regimen that works and how they wanted to do it. And that's often a thing that migraine sufferers are lacking, because they've had this cloud of migraine hanging over their head for so long, then they just never know when an attack is going to strike. And that just feels out of control.
Absolutely. It can debilitate your life the whole day, the whole week even. Yeah, that that PA gives me like PTSD, what you just said, because that was my life. Like exam week, every exam week, it was like, the stress of the stress would just cause migraines. And I'm glad I know that now. But Nurtec would have been nice to have back then.
Well, we're getting the word out to people who are on their way into those kinds of exams that they have an option.
Like take control. And like you said, I know, women are three times more likely to suffer migraines, and we do have a big hormonal component, at least many people do. And a lot of it's, cycle related. And this would, again, be a great thing to have take back control.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the key features that we can give that's people wonderful. Is the ability to be in control.
Yeah. So I want to pivot a little bit, and thank you so much for talking. You've educated me so much on migraines. When I went to school, it was 15 years ago, and so much has come out since then. And I really appreciate you taking the time to explain all this. But you've also had like a very decorated career, and I'd love to talk a little bit, maybe just about leadership and just some insight into your leadership style, and maybe what would be the best career advice you would give to somebody starting off or in midway in their career?
Look, so thanks for the nice words. I just see every individual brings a unique perspective. So as a leader, I try to provide an opportunity for people to express their giftedness and give them an opportunity to contribute and to shine. I've also learned that it depends on the situation. So you talked about the stress of, going into exams. So, there's a little personality assessment tool called the Myers-Briggs. And so part of this is to know yourself. So in periods of calm, I fall in the nurturing, giving part of the Myers-Briggs scale. So that means I'm collaborative, I'm working together, I'm building up the team. However, in periods of stress, I fall into the controlling, taking aspect of the Myers-Briggs personality assessment. And so I kind of switch into dominant leader role to help get us out of the mess. But knowing that, I can flex and try to be more aware of that and say to myself, maybe can I step back here even in the midst of this crisis and provide an opportunity for others to step up? So that's just a little bit about my kind of philosophy in my leadership style. And then in terms of career advice, so some of the best career advice I got was from a graduate student who was in graduate school in her 12th year. And she said to me, "Charlie, the reason to be in graduate school is to get out. Nobody's going to know that I picked a project that I had to spend 10 years laying the scientific groundwork when I should have just asked a question that was answerable in my typical dissertation period. I should have saved that for my, afterwards, my career." So that was really good advice.
That probably, from a research perspective would be great advice. And then to tag onto that, I know, especially in pharmacy school, and even my husband's a physician, a lot of the physicians he work with, he they're going through burnout. A lot of people are doing career changes, or even students just starting out are looking to get into a pharmaceutical company. And I know you said you had a lot of students who rotate through with you. What would you say to maybe, say, a pharmacy student who really is thinking about having a career in research or with a pharmaceutical company? What would be a good step for them to take?
Yeah, so look, I think in every aspect of every career space, the data on this is very clear. Get an internship, you know, start looking now for next summer, apply early, like in December. You know, an internship gives you a chance to try out an area of interest and also helps you learn what suits you and what you're suited well to. You know, one of the other pieces of advice somebody gave me on careers was every job has busy work. Find a career where the busy work doesn't make you crazy. So I would just encourage students to, you know, look early at internship options and be open to the doors there and to trying it out.
That's great. I love that. Every job is busy work. Just find one that you can handle or that you enjoy. Aside of NurTech, what has been the highlight of your career to date? Or you can answer NurTech if that's it.
Well, that's hard. You know, I've been very blessed. Look, I'll pick out one of the bright days and it's got a NurTech relationship to it. I was in a meeting where a singer-songwriter, and I'll name her name's Allie Seeley. She's in Nashville. She was a migraine sufferer and she suffered with migraine. And she wrote this song called Not All in Your Head. And one of the lyrics was, people think you're making it up. And this goes back to what you said early on, which is you can't tell when somebody's suffering from a migraine because it's all internal, right?
Right.
And so I was listening to her sing and I was thinking about how long she had been suffering with migraine. It's like her migraine suffering career sort of mimicked my research career. And I got a chance to talk with her afterwards. And just to meet somebody who said, I'm in control now and I have my life back, and to meet that person in person, I'd gotten letters before and notes and stuff from people, but to meet the real person whose life was affected, it was like that moment was like, if all 22 years only helped this one person, that was enough for me.
Oh, that's awesome. And I'm sure, you know, it's obviously been millions, but just to kind of experience that. Okay, so I asked these two questions of everyone. What would be your favorite over-the-counter product? It can be anything. It can be lotion, Tylenol.
Sure. Actually, it's Sudafed. And the real Sudafed, behind-the-counter Sudafed, not the pseudoephedrine that you get, you know, in front of the counter. The phenylephrine that you get in front of the counter. I suffered from airborne allergies in seasonal allergies. And, you know, so Sudafed is a wonderful thing.
Probably a lifesaver.
Yeah.
And then what, I guess this might be the same answer, but what is something you always have in your medicine cabinet?
Hydrogen peroxide. You know, you never know when you're going to get a little cut or something and you want to clean it out good. And so you should always have some hydrogen peroxide in your medicine cabinet.
Oh, that's a good one too. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Conway. It has been such an honor to have you today as a guest. I've learned a lot and I really, really just appreciate you sharing your expertise with us.
Oh, thanks so much, Joanna. It's really been a pleasure to meet you and get to know you and to hear your story and your journey. And what I would say to your listeners, if you're somebody who's suffering from migraine and you've given up because you couldn't tolerate the treatments that are out there, there are new treatments and there's a reason to go and have a new chat with your physician. So check out some of the new therapies and see if they can be a benefit to you. And thanks so much again, Joanna, for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to On the Shelf. Join us next month as we continue to talk to thought leaders and change makers in the world of wellness.